We're having our own meetings.
Please, Ms. Parker.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this opportunity. Although short-term visitor accommodation holiday homes have received bad press in Queenstown and some cities around the world, it is the usual story of an amazing small business opportunity for many everyday people who operate well-run holiday homes or in-home stays marred by the few of bad operators and no or little consequences for those bad operators by the authorities in charge. I've owned myself and managed a holiday home on Queenstown Hill for 3 years now. I bought it for the sole purpose of doing visitor home accommodation. It gave me a chance at my age to have a new career and actually run my own business. It is 4-bedroom, 3.5 bathroom upmarket home. It is a much superior home to our own home, and I have a much superior mortgage to boot. I would not have purchased it for an everyday rental as a cumulative effect of such a nice home with living and rental damages and the return on investment wouldn't have actually made it viable for me. I have two other homes, my own, and a cottage in Arrowtown just coming on to visitor accommodation market. I must say that I had to pay over the odds, being so nervous about what the council was doing and the misinformation on the timeframes when everything would be done. We all took that if you didn't get something by February, you were out. It hasn't actually changed that, so that was another thing that would be really clear for people who don't understand these things. Right, so I want to talk to about the finance, and I'm going to share this quite openly. So my 2017 financial report shows I spent nearly $80,000 directly into the Queenstown economy keeping this holiday home. It doesn't include any of the things like interest and body corp and depreciation and those, just the money that I spend giving to people. My biggest costs are cleaning, home maintenance, garden and spa pool cleaning, and a large number of consumables I purchase to keep my property to a high level. All of this is spent locally and helps keep jobs and the economy going. I also want to point out to you all that the Deloitte's economics benefits of Airbnb in Queenstown is only Airbnb. Us providers get most of our bookings from holiday houses and Book a Batch, which is now Home Away, and other places, and they are huge guest bookings. So I think I would really like you to look at that economic study and double it quite conservatively. This town has always been a holiday hometown. I've lived in the same house in Calvin Heights between Willow Place and Peninsula Road for 20 years, and always I've had less than half our surrounding neighbours have been long-term. I do understand and sympathise with the people at Lake Hayes and Shot Over Country like my previous person. That was built for locals in mind with schools and other facilities nearby. But these houses could be zoned as standalone holiday accommodation free areas. And in fact, these new subdivisions coming on are, I think, really important for everybody, particularly you, to look at that we're coming of age. We are now at a stage where we've got all sorts of problems, but wonderful problems. We have, tiring problems. Because our kids can finally perhaps come back here and live. But with that, we are now having these places that are actually done not just for holiday homes and sold to anybody, they are for families. So why not zone those new places if that's what they're really being done as not able to have standalone holiday visitor accommodation, but still allowing people there to generate income from their garages, their homes, their rooms, etc., because they need that help and they bought on the basis that it should be able to help them cover their mortgages. So my main issues with the council's proposed changes on short-term accommodation are, first of all, the lack of realism that this town would not be able to accommodate the number of visitors that now come here if it relied just on hotel and motel accommodation. Backpackers and others. Even with the new hotels planned, it would not and could not meet the visitor numbers we have now, let alone future growth. The lack of understanding that a new online booking system worldwide allows not just mostly overseas-owned hotel chains where their profits go offshore or people with huge assets, but everyday locals the chance to earn extra money or run a full-time business from their biggest asset, their home. The hotel and motel industry has largely stayed the same business model since the early 1960s with a few tweaks, and that putting considerable pressure on the council to protect their businesses against this great growing sector of everyday people. They should be looking at ways to innovate and reinvent themselves, and I give the analogy here of the horse and cart and the unstoppable changes that the car made in the early 20th century. There is a lack of understanding that consumer demand, thanks to these new online bookings, have changed customer and consumer preferences to allow us to stay in other people's homes with far more facilities and usually at a per person better rate than hotels. They're still the number one preference and probably always will be for business. It has allowed groups of families and friends to spend time together, and those who can't afford a batch to actually pretend they have a batch sometime during their holiday. And the growing trend of homeowner ownership at a historic 50-year low is to rent properties for holidays that you were at places you'd never ever expect to afford to own. So my two specific issues to the proposed changes are: one, low density areas will not be allowed to have standalone visitor accommodation, carte blanche. My recommendation is that to restrict visitors in the town zone from Goldfields to Fern Hill is short-sighted. Visitors want to be near downtown, and our downtown businesses need them to run profitable businesses. This is where the majority of holiday homes are now. Queenstown Hill, Fern Hill, as everybody has said, whether they're for or against it, we are used to hotel accommodation in that area. And so I recommend the status quo from Sunshine Bay to Goldfields. We are literally, and this isn't a personal thing, it's to show you, on Queenstown Hill, my holiday home is one house over. I'm in low density to the people who are in high density. And Queenstown Hill is right where our wonderful downtown needs to thrive and grow. So that's my first recommendation. The next is the standalone holiday homes, the historic minimum 3-day minimum. I want to talk to you about the unfairness about this, and it probably is, and I haven't asked somebody that might even live with me before, whether it's against, now I'm married to a lawyer, whether it's against a Fair Trading or Something Act, it probably is. So for your background, it was a historical requirement imposed by the council over 10 years ago to satisfy the hotel and motel associations, nervous with the new Airbnb accommodation model, it would take businesses from them. Now I personally have no problem paying commercial rates of 80%. I did when I first did it, but then I thought, no, I am a business. I want to play in this business area because that is my business, and it's the best one I've ever been a part of. So I pay 80% more than normal rates for up to 365 days of the year. I've always been resource consented, but my resource consent requires a minimum 3-day stays. Yet all visitor accommodation providers who have a self-contained flat of any number of bedrooms or bathrooms with their primary home structure or a separate holiday flat on their land on the same property only pay 25% more rates. That's fine, they live there, but have no minimum stays. 365 days a year they have. So a much fairer and equitable place, because I've shared with you my high costs, which those people don't have the same as me, but that's fine, it's my business and my choice, would be to wipe the 3-day stays for standalone homes. Most homes with over 3 bedrooms couldn't afford, it wouldn't be profitable to do a 1-day. We are talking about the occasions where we've got a month to look at it, and we have got 3-day minimums, and we end up sometimes with 5 2-days that we can't do, and it really affects our business. So I'm happy to continue paying them, but I believe we should all be on the same playing field for all accommodation providers. And here's my real example. There's no justifiable reason why my holiday home, which has a minimum 3-day, and the people up the roads fabulous three-bedroom, two-bathroom, self-contained flat in their house have no restrictions. I don't want you to penalise them. I want you to free up us standalone ones who have the highest costs and the highest rates. So thank you very much.
In your submission, the original submission that
yes.
you put in, you talked about keeping the 90-day as the baseline and
yes.
then allowing resource consents like you have
yes.
up to 360.
Yes.
Are you still suggesting to us that's your that you're okay with that, or is your preference really to allow 360? I mean, how do you see the need to get a resource?
The 90 days is for people who only want to do their home. I was really cross with the 28 days. I read some person in council and planning went, you get 4 weeks holiday a year. That's a very naughty thing to say, but that's how I sort of saw it. And I felt for others, that's not my place of where I am. I just felt that 90 days gave people in this very expensive place, and with the growing elderly population going to get more and more, I thought it was a wonderful chance. So I felt that was fair. I don't mind people taking opportunities off me. The 42's now come out. I think a lot of people will ask for more. I would love to see it stay at 90, not for me, for the others. I am in a different position.
So you made a resource consent under the existing
yes.
previous 90-day
yes, I did.
Provision.
Yes.
What sort of thing, can you remember, what sort of things ended up being looked at the time of your resource consent? So what sort of factors did you have to...
I was actually treated like a criminal. And I was told by the planner that if I didn't agree, I had one neighbour, I said, who's overseas, and he rents out to Red Bull, and they can rent as many times as they like, that's no problem, but I can't get hold of him. And he's come back and said, I'd rather not. And she said, you won't get your resource consent unless you get their man to say yes or no. She intimated that if I didn't give the things I wanted, I had taken this to the CEO. The things I want. In fact, I had my friend and I, who's been in it 10 years. We both were treated. She was treated terribly. I was the middle one, and then right next door to my exact same place as mine, I had our lovely friends who were running the same thing. They got it through just like that. They'd had enough of us too. So it's very inequitable.
So apart from having to get you, or being asked to get your name as a written approval,
yes, yeah.
What sort of matters did the council ask you to provide information about or take into account? Things like noise, parking?
Absolutely. And I gave all of that. So I actually asked, I went into council and I said, I want a successful application. For somebody in my area and zone, and they went, you can't have that. And I said, well, I want one, because why would I, a person like the, you know, me, I don't know about this, give me a successful one so I can learn. So I literally copied that. And I've given so many and helped so many people with those applications. It is mind-boggling if you are a person like me, but I at least can work through things and write. And these other people I've helped, I went again and said, I'm inundated with people who need help to race in and do this now. And I also gave a recommendation how to, there's so many things that they don't have to ask for, that they can say, these are the rules, put them down, it must have off-street parking for da-da-da, maximum two-bedroom, all these things, tell them, and also put it online. Put the latest successful ones online so we can all access it.
So just one more question on this line. When your application was being considered and you were providing the information...
That was way before this one.
Yes,
yeah.
I know, but even at that time, was there any consideration of whether, as an alternative, you might be renting that house long-term?
For myself, you mean I considered that?
Or the council said, well, why can't you be a long-term renter?
No, because...
That wasn't an issue?
No.
No, it was more about the immediate effects, parking, noise, yes, capacity, yes, and all those, yes, sorts, yes, of things. Yes.
All the things you had to do under the district plan to, yes, comply. No. Yes.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
No,
sorry.
Just got me
into
start. I was
never very good at school.
Yes, one of the things that Dave was interesting of your comments made earlier, it was very helpful for Mr. Ho. You stated here in your second paragraph, although not purchased it for an everyday rental, the cumulative effect of everyday living and rental damage in rental terms would not justify it as a viable investment. And you may have been here when I asked
that. Yes, I did, yes.
On the face of it, it could be argued, couldn't it, that you're making the point that if you're certainly a mum and dad investor wanting to buy a holiday home or a property in Queenstown, and given the proposed changes to rental laws coming up, which, to say the very least, are not encouraging for landlords, you'd have to be a bit of a fool to buy a house here for rental purposes.
Look, this was a different house. I don't know enough about that to answer that. For me personally, I'm very happy to tell my personal one. It was such a beautiful house that I could see that I could be part of the tourism industry, which is what our place is about. And I have also heard and had my friends and helped clear up, have some houses trashed. So it was just a different reason for me. I also wasn't comfortable. I actually wanted to be a hands-on person. Visitor short-term accommodation, like my friend, I book their restaurants. If anybody's sick, if they've got any problems, I'll do anything. I've even had them come over to my place when they're waiting for a plane, da-da-da-da. So I didn't want just a collector rent. I actually wanted to be part of giving service to our Queenstown visitors.
They've obviously got a very well thought through and detailed submission, which I'm going to certainly appreciate that. There was one interesting comment you have made, though, and that is, and I think it's changed slightly from your original submission, is that you're suggesting there should be some kind of split between different parts of the low-density residential zone.
Yes. I've come to that conclusion as I've read and heard, which is why, thank God, I asked to speak, because it's been really interesting to have the conversations that we've had. And I just, when I started to think about this, I was actually listening to all the things happening downtown and the issues for downtown, because the locals are really leaving downtown in droves, to not using it so much. And I actually worry about that. That is our vibrancy and our everything. And you just, particularly my age group, and well, really probably from about 40 to 70, everyone just moans and groans about it. And that worried me, and it worries me about us making sure that businesses are doing what they're doing, whether we slow the growth and stop more people coming in or what. We have it now. So I'm more, I was really... businesses in town have to survive. That's crucial to
Queenstown. I understand that, but you know, it doesn't put the cards on top. I'm a permanent resident of Fernhill.
Yes.
Now, you're suggesting here that effectively what a first and second class system within what is a low density residential zone. So I should expect to live in an area where...
It's a very good point.
Shouldn't I be entitled to the same rights as...
Yes.
Or anybody,
yes,
in Arrowtown,
yes,
or Jackson.
So I probably should have worded that more correctly and said, you need to look at the low density, and my reasoning is for CBD and for the visitors where they want to come. You may have been here for a long time like me, we've all been through the crashes, and I wasn't, had anything to do with the tourism business directly, but it is so awful everybody, that's my also motivation.
So what I'm really saying is, shouldn't the rules, given that no one's
yes.
changed it, shouldn't
that,
the rules
that's
be
a really
the same
dumb thing. Thank you very much for pointing it out.
Okay, no, that's fine. Thank you very much. It's
thank
very
you.
Helpful.
Miss Parker.
It's all right. I'm only
there's no escape.
I'm only a counselor, and you don't have to.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Oh, golly, I would you you like me to go to the principal's office now? I am used to that.
I told you there were four of us.
No, that's perfectly fine. You and I probably sat outside the principal's office together. The first of all, apologies that you were treated like a criminal. It should never happen. The only thing I'd say in council's defence, because obviously council staff always get everything right, there's a price to be paid for being first. And Kate Shepherd struggled to get women the vote, and now we can all turn up and witness it. Hopefully we'll get there. These processes are never easy, but we will get there. The gentleman a couple of times before suggested a solution which was proposed by New South Wales and Tasmania, and they were talking about 365 days if you're on site and 108 days if you're off site. And one of the things he said was the three strikes and you're out rule. And I see that in your original submission you suggested that.
Yep, I'm very much for three strikes rule. Obviously the other one, personally and selfishly, would preclude me owning standalone, but I could still do that because I still think, my thing is, I own and manage, and I really own and manage. I meet them, I greet them, I have a backup manager who's scarier than me because I really value my neighbours. They all have my numbers, the neighbours around where. So I do really go for the three strikes and you're out. Again, that was my opening sentence, is the authorities could just, instead of waiting for Mount and Sea to do it, you could, and I'm sorry it's back on you because you are the territorial authority, but you could slap and shame and get the Mount and Sea or whatever in if people like me have had complaints and it happens three times.
And I agree with that, but wouldn't that then be treating them like a criminal?
No, you've broken your rules. I was trying to get something that I was allowed to, you mean treating me like
a criminal? No, the person, for whatever reason, has had the three strikes. And because that's an interesting point that I was leading to, was how do you then deal with, if you say it's all good and blah, 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 three strikes and you're out, how is someone out?
Here's my thing. I expect, when I've done three resource consents now, I expect, I was 16 3 years ago, look at me, but I expect I expect that in my resource consent to say you are responsible for the behaviour of your people, and we already have all our signs, nothing out after 10 p.m, 7 p.m, and we all should have to do that, and I expect that if there's a problem and I get to hear about it, I'm up there. With I have somebody on call, I've never had to have them yet, and I get rid of them. And in my rules, on all my sites, it says you have 2 hours to rectify, otherwise you will be left and you will not get any refund. And I expect that should be standard required by the council. The awful thing though is up on Queenstown Hill and round Fern Hill as well, you go up there and there's yelling and screaming and there's Saturday afternoon last week, I was doing my work, and there's great big parties happening, and it's at the rental places, and I was talking to my neighbour with a new baby, and she said, oh God, we're in for another terrible night. You can't do anything about that. That's rental and that's life. But my ones, you should and could.
I'd just like to say thanks very much for a very impassioned presentation.
Thank you.
And just sticking around to talk to the council.
I don't think it's pretty, so thank you.
I should have sat till you said that. I'm nervous.
Which I know wasn't, it didn't actually make it to the consultation document, and I think that might be part of the reason why we haven't had any submissions on it. So my name's Nikki, I live in Penorky. Today I'd like to reiterate my concerns with the proposed definition of visitor accommodation, and these relate to the potential effects of the proposed definition on the availability of housing, on residential cohesion, character and amenity, and on the integrity of existing commercial centres. I'm particularly concerned about the effect on Glenorchy and any of the townships that have residential zones that are overlain by visitor accommodation subzones. And of course this is because the township chapter actually hasn't been reviewed alongside that new proposed definition. Specifically, there's not been any opportunity to review the activity status of visitor accommodation in the township's VA subzones. There's not been any opportunity to revise the matters over which council has control or discretion in these zones. And there's been no assessment of effects against the objectives and policies of the township zones or the objectives contained in the small community plans. So it just feels like it's getting ahead of itself. We've had all the sort of zones assessed against that new definition, all the VA subzones within Queenstown, Wanaka and Arrowtown, but the townships have been completely left out of that. And we're just a bit concerned that you're going to have a new definition that's going to be operative and we're still going to have the old controls in place and the old activity status from the township zones running at the same time. I also don't believe there's been adequate assessment of the potential effects of the proposed definition. It's not clear what the change is meant to achieve, basically because it was proposed by visitor accommodation businesses, and council's taken on their submissions. It's also not clear that the proposed definition can or is the best way to give effect to the strategic objectives of the plan or the purpose of the Act, particularly considering the diverse communities within this district. So if we talk about the proposed definition, it's significantly different to the definition that was notified in 2015. So 2015 proposed district plan retained the operative definition with the single addition of, and you've got it there, but where provisions above are otherwise altered by zone rules, the zone rules shall apply. So it gave a nice little out to make different rules for different zones. The 2015 proposal did not allow the visitor accommodation facilities to be used by people not staying overnight, but it did allow for that to be altered by the zone rules. So I've just put down the parts that are relevant to my submission. So these are the parts out of the proposed definition of visitor accommodation. So I'll just refer back to those. So this definition couples visitor accommodation with commercial activities that are associated with or ancillary to the visitor accommodation activity. By the definition, those activities could include restaurants, conference rooms, bars, recreational facilities such as gyms, pools. I think we talked about golf courses at the last hearing, and other activities of a similar nature. In addition, there are no limits to scale that have any legislative teeth. So the facilities, it says, must be ancillary to the visitor accommodation, but this is defined in the section 42A that was came out in February 2017. They use the Oxford Dictionary definition, so that definition is providing necessary support to the primary activities or operation of an organisational system, also in addition to something else, but not as important. So that definition doesn't limit the scale of these ancillary facilities. It doesn't say they need to be subordinate, it just says that they support. And I think there need to be very clear limits if you've never put that in there. The range of activities that will be allowed under this definition is unclear and potentially substantial, and with no clear limits to scale or activity, this definition will undoubtedly put the council in a position where it must decide between granting consents that don't align with its objectives or risk costly legal action. And of course the ratepayers are paying for that, and so the definition is not efficient in my opinion. In terms of the effect on housing availability, residential cohesion and amenity, the council is very concerned at the moment, as it should be, with ensuring there is sufficient residential housing to meet the needs of the community. It's also concerned with protecting residential cohesion and amenity. Significant changes have been made to the visitor accommodation provisions to meet these objectives. Generally, these have been restrictive for residential homeowners. However, the proposed definition of visitor accommodation for backpackers and lodges and motels will significantly reduce the restrictions for visitor accommodation businesses. The proposed definition will Firstly, incentivise the development of more and larger visitor accommodation facilities within residential zones. It will raise the value of visitor accommodation subzone land. It will reduce the availability of residential housing as a consequence, and result in a significant level of commercial activity within visitor accommodation subzones, which further reduces residential cohesion and amenity. And I realise that we're probably looking at trying to encourage visitor accommodation development, and this is a bit of an incentive for those businesses, but I think there are obviously other ways to do it, and I would suggest that if we do this and we allow all these ancillary activities or facilities to be used by people that aren't staying on site, we are creating, you know, this commercial activity, and we're going to end up with quite a bit of land that could have been used for accommodation, being used for those ancillary activities, which could actually, you know, create a lot more economic benefit that way. In terms of the effect on Glenorchy, visitor accommodation is a controlled activity within the visitor accommodation subzone, which is on the entrance to Glenorchy. The controls that are on that have not yet been reviewed and are limited to what I've written down there, so external appearance of buildings, setback, boundaries, roads, and access. So it's not a long list. Under the proposed definition of visitor accommodation, commercial activity that's associated with that visitor accommodation in that subzone will shift from a discretionary activity to a controlled activity overnight, with no additional controls. So a camping ground or a motel could, as of a right, include a restaurant or bar or conference facility without any control on the hours of operation or noise mitigation or provision of additional parking. It's also going to have an effect, and I haven't written this down, on notifications. So a business which can't obviously just walk in and set up a restaurant now could essentially do that if they're setting up a visitor accommodation facility, because it's sort of a controlled activity. And there's going to be an expectation that there's no notification of that. So the people in and around the town who are going to be affected by the parking, the additional people, they're not going to have an opportunity to be consulted. And obviously with that general people, everything I mentioned at Lehman will apply as well. And we have significant issues up there at the moment with housing availability. So we would like the land that's zoned residential to actually become residential housing rather than visitor accommodation and commercial, because we already have a commercial zone. So significantly, council have removed the opportunity to fix any obvious issues with this definition within certain zones by removing that bit at C, which says where the provisions above are otherwise altered by zone laws, the zone law should apply. I'm not sure why they've done that. It was council that decided to do that and they've pulled it out, and I can't see a good reason to remove it. The relief I seek is to include the following provisions within the definition of visitor accommodation at 2 and C. And I've written it out there for you. So I'm suggesting we remove the bit that says the primary role of these facilities is to serve as overnight guests of accommodation, however they can be used by persons not staying on site. And I would replace that with these facilities are for the use of overnight guests only. And then you've got the inclusion at C, where that can be changed in certain zones, like wherever that's appropriate in Queenstown, so we wouldn't be implementing. This definition that I propose is more restrictive than the proposed definition, but it is more flexible than the operative definition. The provision at C allows for the operative restrictions with respect to centralised facilities to be reduced or removed in certain zones. This is what Council proposed in 2015. It will give council greater controls to better protect the availability of housing and residential amenity. This definition will give council greater ability to manage growth. It's also unambiguous, the current definition is, and that will reduce the legal cost, risk of legal challenges and that cost to ratepayers. And this definition is therefore more efficient than the proposed definition. Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you.
I just want to make sure I understand how you see these provisions having worked in the past. The number C that you refer to that's gone, but is in the operative provision.
No, it's not the operative, it was proposed in 2015. But it didn't come in. So what happened was we had this definition. In 2015 the proposed definition was the same as the operative definition, except it included that provision C. What happened then was we had submissions from visitor accommodation businesses that operate in visitor accommodation subzones. So they're, in terms of commercial activity, they're quite restricted. and two different businesses proposed that, one from Glenorchy and one from Wanaka. And what they proposed was making sure that commercial or any facilities that were on their properties could be used by people that weren't staying on site. They didn't propose removing C, so I'm not sure why council's done that. It was left in there for two rounds of consultation.
Gone.
It's been struck out now, and what I'm suggesting is that it should be reinstated.
So that gives. I'm just trying to get my head around how it works. So if I say tell you what I think you're saying, tell me if I'm completely wrong. That in those zones which are actually more liberal, which would allow some commercial facilities, for example, would this allow those to be re-included?
I guess if you're talking about visitor accommodation where it's already commercial, it's not going to make any difference.
Yes, because the zone allows that anyway.
The zone allows that anyway. What I'm saying is there may be other areas, and I haven't read through all the high density, medium density, low density restrictions, but I'm aware that there are places within central Queenstown where it's essentially commercial on the doorstep anyway. There's not a lot of residential activity. And it may well be appropriate to have, as of a right, commercial activity with visitor accommodation. I'm not saying that that is a bad thing across the everywhere. I'm saying that what it feels like the planners have done is they've been really Queenstown, Wanaka, sort of city-focused, and they've completely forgotten about the townships, which are all about residential amenity and low density and low scale. So by allowing this definition to be spread across the district and not allow for different zones to actually pull back on that, council's giving away control. And we're going to see, you know, all these residential owners are being slapped with restrictions, but visitor accommodation businesses, is you're opening it up for them and you're giving them incentives to develop bigger and more facilities. And to me, residential land, then it's residential but subzoned visitor accommodation, is going to be more valuable now to visitor accommodation developers because they can see the potential developed commercially within their development. So they can put in a restaurant now. It was discretionary, for example, and it will now only be a controlled activity, or it was non-complying and it will now be restricted discretionary. So they have certainty that they can achieve that restaurant or bar or whatever. But essentially these are visitor accommodation subzones. The underlying zone is residential. So if you're wanting to achieve better residential cohesion, why are we saying to these guys who have got houses and they, you know, you can't have your Airbnb here. But actually the guy who wants to develop visitor accommodation development can actually put in a bar. You know? So
Can I just clarify, Mr. President? Yeah. Your concerns are focused on the township zone, aren't they?
No, both. So what I'm saying is that this definition was proposed by visitor accommodation businesses. I don't actually know what the effect will be in town, and I guess my concern is that through none of those reports is it obvious that council's gone, this is why we're putting this definition in, these are the objectives we're achieving, these are the advantages and disadvantages of this definition, here's another option with advantages and disadvantages, which best achieves the objectives, which is most effective. It seems to me they had a definition which was completely different from the current proposed definition, that had stuck with the operative definition, which doesn't allow, as of a right, commercial activity within a visitor accommodation development. And they've just flipped from one to the other simply because a couple of businesses proposed it without assessing the effects. And I'm just concerned there's going to be some pretty serious unintended consequences, and that you guys haven't had a lot of us talking on this because it didn't make it to the consultation document. So all of this stuff on residential made it, and it was all open for discussion. But you had to dig quite hard to find this change.
So irrespective, the townships haven't been considered yet, and it's quite possible there could be a different definition or constraints on visitor accommodation in townships.
How would that work?
It's possible. I'm not saying it could or would have no idea, but it's possible through the township zones there could be further constraints on visitor accommodation than there are in other visitor accommodation subzones. But irrespective of that, we don't know what will happen.
you're saying that in, say, a low-density residential zone or a medium density where there's an overlay of visitor accommodation subzone, that not only is that the effect of changing the definition is to increase the range of activities that can go on in those subzones beyond what one might.
Correct.
So,
yeah.
So even an existing subzone that's now a data subzone, there is a change.
Because
of the change to the definition.
What it's allowing is commercial activity where it was actually very restricted before. It would be unlikely to be passed and would definitely have gone through public consultation. Now it's going to be, as of a right, under the definition of visitor accommodation. I think it would be very difficult to, you're saying there could be different rules for the townships. It would be very difficult to do that once you've got a definition, because that's going to be operative, potentially, unless I appeal it, when the township is being reviewed. So you're giving rights to people, and then we're going to have to fight hard to take them away.
Right,
does that make sense?
Yes.
Particularly because the campground in Glenorchy is the one that proposed it. So they are wanting to put a restaurant and conference facilities, things that they can do as of a right without expecting to have to go through a hearing or whatever. So we know that there's a potential for that to happen, because these are the people who have asked for the definition to be changed. If that makes sense.
I can understand. Thank you very much.
Just a bit of clarification. You say that commercial activity, restaurant, bar, conference facility, without any control on hours of operation, noise mitigation, as of right, you still got the district license and the agency, you've still got a resource consent to change the operation of the building, so there are still.
No, because in Glenorchy, we're just talking about Glenorchy.
Why not? I was impressed to hear you refer to Wanaka as a city.
Oh, did I? You're welcome.
That's
okay. So visitor accommodation in Glenorchy is controlled. So I think you kind of need to understand what the district plan or the activity status, what effect that has. But so visitor accommodation is controlled in the visitor accommodation subzone. So it has controlled activity status, which means that it's going to happen. You know, if you want to put a new visitor, if you've got a piece of land, you want to do visitor accommodation, it's going to happen. The only things council can control are setbacks, whatever I bring down there, setbacks, access, landscaping of parking areas, and so on and so forth. So when you put, when you allow them to have a restaurant or a bar under the definition of visitor accommodation, that restaurant and bar has controlled activity status, which means the council can't turn it down. It goes ahead as of a right. The only things council can control are the landscaping and the look of the parking area and the setbacks from the boundaries at the moment. Those are the only controls. So that's what I'm saying. So what's happened in Queenstown is these different zones, the controls have been considered against the new definition, and so they've got things like the hours of operation of ancillary activities. That's all been dealt with at the same time. Of course, they haven't dealt with the townships. So we're stuck with the same old controls, which don't consider what you might need to control in terms of an activity like a bar or a restaurant.
Ms. Blair,
yeah.
I think you're working on a misconception.
Oh, go for it, please. If I am, that's fantastic.
The visitor accommodation provided for a low-density residential zone, which would be the closest to township, is proposed to be a restricted discretionary activity. One of the matters of consideration is noise generations, method of mitigation, hours of operation, including the respective ancillary activities.
Yeah, I've read that, but that doesn't apply to Glenorchy.
Well, no, because that's because the provisions haven't been drafted for
Glenorchy. But that's what I'm saying.
You're presuming that the provisions of Glenorchy will just roll over and be the same, and if they were to be made the same as that, then wouldn't all those issues be dealt with?
So all of this will go up for consultation, and there will be hearings, and the visitor accommodation businesses will be able to sit here and say, but actually what we've got at the moment is it's controlled and we don't want it to go to restricted discretionary, and of course there will be this to and fro balancing act. All I'm saying is that
yes, but the reason council appoints independent commission. so that we can balance the views of the local residents and the desires of the businesses. I assure you that we are not just listening to the desires of businesses, that our goal is to listen to everyone, and that while those businesses may have talked to the council, we are fully independent of the council.
I appreciate that. I guess I still, regardless of the outcome for Glenorchy, and the rules may change and the controls may change, and I'm sure they will. I don't know what will happen to the activity status, but it will be hard to pull that back. But regardless, we've still got this issue where you've got these zones within Queenstown that you're allowing commercial activity, and I cannot understand what the reason is, because the reason hasn't been detailed.
That provision applies in Queenstown. In the business of accommodation, subzone in Queenstown, it's low density residential zone. Restricted discretionary activity, it can be refused consent. The hours of operation can be controlled. The noise generation can be controlled. And there's all sorts of other provisions.
That's true, but you've also got the issue of notification that hasn't been considered. So you're reducing the likelihood that anybody in that zone will be able to have a say.
Yes. I'm not going to have an argument with you.
No,
I understand that.
Notification.
Since this was notified, has been changed by the government's legislation, not by the council.
It's all right, I've had my say, so I'm quite happy with having had my say and gotten a view forward. I don't need to carry on.
Okay. Okay.
All good, no, thanks.
Cool.
Thank you.
Mr. Simon?
So I think I wanted to start by basically giving my story of how my wife and I got into hosting on Airbnb and talk through the positives and the negatives that we've seen out of that. So we moved to Queenstown approximately 4 years ago, and we absolutely loved the region, which was why we moved there. We're also avid travellers, and personally when we have travelled overseas as well as throughout New Zealand, we have made use of home sharing services like Airbnb. And I think there are a few advantages that travellers all around the world are really seeing and finding from that Airbnb style of experience, which is where a lot of people now are wanting to travel and experience a foreign city the same way a local does. And this really comes down to staying in a local's house as opposed to taking a conventional hotel room for their stay. Research has shown from Airbnb that this is a traveller preference that is developing as well. Lastly, this has been, the reason we've got into hosting as well, has been a long-term investment strategy for my wife and myself. We look to this as providing some security in our future for our retirement. So Airbnb makes that possible, whereas for us, a long-term rental strategy would not have financially worked for us. I think there's also a lot of negativity around the Airbnb sort of hosting. Some, granted, is warranted, and some is maybe misplaced. And personally, we take our hosting and our responsibilities very seriously. My wife in particular, when we lived in Wellington, was a property manager for Quinovic, so she's very up to speed with residential property management. We currently have three properties in Queenstown that we rent for short-term visitor accommodation. So the biggest thing I think is that we intend to play by the rules, and we are leasing these properties, renting these properties for 365 days of the year. Obviously that means that we need resource consent for those properties, and so far the first property that we purchased that has gone through resource consent, we've successfully achieved that resource consent. The further two properties which we've more recently purchased, we're currently going through that resource consent process. The other aspect with this is we do have a lot of respect for our neighbours and the potential downsides that Airbnb can bring. So we know there is a social impact there on the neighbourhood, and we're trying to minimise this. So we're very strict with vetting our guests, making sure that we aren't accommodating large groups of young people who are likely to party. We have very strict policies against any partying. We've also gone to the extent that none of the properties have any noise-making equipment. There's no stereos fitted. We also have signage, as required by the council, limiting the use of any outdoor areas between the times of 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. Parking requirements have also been a really big aspect of this, and we've been quite careful with the properties we've purchased to make sure that there is more than adequate parking on-premise off-road parking for our guests. So I guess the point is that in 3 years of hosting, we have currently had zero complaints with our properties. It's also important to mention we have obviously invested very heavily in these properties, and for us it's obviously important to protect our investment. So I feel that our aim there, protecting our investment, is aligned really well with both council regulations as well as keeping the neighbours in the surrounding area happy. Moving on, I also want to talk about just what we gain out of hosting, because I think this is often overlooked as well. So as I mentioned, we moved to Queenstown 4 years ago. At the time, we had a three-year-old daughter, and my wife was pregnant with our son, who's now just turned three. So being able to rent property on Airbnb has allowed my wife the flexibility to stay at home. Obviously, she is involved with the business, but it is not a full-time job. And this would, normally she would have required a full-time job for us to be able to afford to live in Queenstown. I'm really a big advocate of at least one of the parents being able to stay at home during those early years of childhood, and having the benefit of being able to do that, I think there's only got to be a positive aspect of our children's development. The other aspect as well is we do still have family in the North Island, both in Wellington and the Hawke's Bay, particularly with a family of four now travelling backwards and forwards from Queenstown to the North Island, particularly Napier, which is a regional airport, is very expensive. So the extra income has allowed us to do so regularly, and that's really important, I think, for our grandparents to actually form a relationship with the grandchildren. Just move on here. So I think with the financial benefit as well, as I kind of alluded to, the aim here is an investment for our future and the ability to provide for us and our retirement. I think with the turbulent nature of the New Zealand economy, by the time I get to retirement, I do not want to be relying on the government to provide for me. So we're trying to be proactive here and self-sufficient. The other thing that's really important is the effect of the Airbnb hosting on the greater Queenstown community. And I think, again, there's a lot of talk of the negative aspects here, but I think there are some wider considerations that are really easy to overlook. Obviously, I accept that there is a major housing issue in Queenstown. We're not blind to that. No one's going to deny that. And particularly, this is in relation to the worker accommodation. However, at several times during the year, we already know that the traditional hotel industry is at or beyond capacity. So if we want a way of supporting the increasing tourism into the Queenstown area, then there's got to be something to take up the slack. And currently that is the short-term visitor accommodation. The other thing we do need to understand as well, as I alluded to earlier, there are a growing proportion of travellers who don't want to go down conventional track of staying in a hotel room. As I've said, they want to experience Queenstown the same way local people do, and that comes from that visitor accommodation. There is also the aspect that while obviously the cost of booking a property on Airbnb varies dramatically, there are a large number of properties that come in well below the cost of a traditional hotel room. And particularly when you're splitting this across a family or a couple of groups of friends, this makes travel to an expensive part of the country possible for people who otherwise wouldn't be venturing into Queenstown. I'm sure it's probably already been mentioned, but there was a Deloitte study that was commissioned that's shown that short-term visitor accommodation has brought $88 million into Queenstown alone and supplied somewhere in the region of about 700 jobs. I just want to talk to my personal experience with that as well. Now that we have three properties, we employ a cleaning company to clean those properties called Personal Made. We actually know the people who founded that company, because one of them lived in our main family home for a while. So that started as two sisters. Over the period of 2 years, that's now grown to five full-time staff, primarily based on their requirements for servicing Airbnb properties. We also employ a handyman part-time who has built Queenstown to do property maintenance. We employ Peak to Peak as well as Remarkable Garden Services for section care. And I think an important aspect here as well is we hosting allows us to make our own recommendations to our visitors. A really good one that just happened recently, a young man contacted us. They were staying in one of our properties, and he let us know that he wanted to propose to his girlfriend while he was over here and ask for some recommendations. So between a bit of toing and froing, he had a pretty good budget, which is great. So we hooked him up with over-the-top helicopters, who's doing a helicopter tour, proposing to his wife, and then also got him involved with Ignition Self-Drive, who do luxury car rentals, and then suggested that a great place to stay might be the Cadrona Hotel for a night. So I think that local insight is probably not something that's going to come across in the traditional hotel industry. Lastly, the problems that I currently see with the situation. I think there is an expectation that eliminating visitor accommodation, short-term visitor accommodation, is some kind of silver bullet that is going to fix this worker accommodation problem and the affordable housing situation. And yes, undoubtedly, if we remove some of these properties from the pool, it's going to have an impact, but I don't think it's going to have the great impact that a lot of people think. Predominantly with our properties that we've got, I would think that if they were returned to long-term rental, for example, you're going to be looking somewhere in the region of $800 to maybe $1,000, $1,200 a week for a two-bedroom property, and I certainly don't consider that to be affordable at the level that worker accommodation requires. There are also some issues around groups being dropped by buses in residential areas such as Lake Hayes Estate, Shotover Country, and I do accept that this is a problem in some of the regions, and I think it does need to be addressed through the resource consent process. The two biggest problems that I see though, or the biggest problem I see, sorry, is currently non-compliance. The council is proposing that the current line in the sand of 90 days is reduced. Now, I believe it's been changed to 42. And a couple of years ago, I believe the council sent out 800 letters to homeowners for non-compliance. And I'm highly suspicious that all of those 800 homeowners probably have not gone through the resource consent process. I think the problem that exists currently is those homeowners out there renting for short-term on the likes of Airbnb, with no resource consent in place and with no intention of doing so. And I don't see how reducing the 90-day current limit down to 28 or 42 or wherever it happens to be is going to affect that. The biggest problem I see here is the council currently doesn't have the manpower to police that and check on compliance. So basically making the laws more stringent, I don't see how that is going to help with compliancing around it. Speaking to Jim Bolt at a meeting we had earlier from some Airbnb hosts, he suggested that currently council are relying on neighbours to dob in non-compliant people renting their homes, which I just don't see as a good long-term solution. So I do fully support the need for compliance, but I think it needs policing, and again, I just don't see changing that line in the sand is going to make much difference there. I also believe it's appropriate that visitor accommodation activities are prohibited in certain areas. And again, sort of, we look at the likes of Lake Hayes Estate and Shotover Country, where there are some problems there. What I'm really worried about mostly is the carte blanche approach to making it impossible under the new legislation for a low-density residential area to attain resource consent. And I don't think that an across-the-board approach like that is reasonable. Now, the example I give is I live in Lake Hayes Estate, personally, as my family home, and I don't necessarily think that Lake Hayes Estate is the perfect area for short-term visitor accommodation. It's low-density residential. One of the properties we own is in Goldfield Heights. This is an apartment-style complex. This is also zoned low density residential, but given the apartment style living, it is much better suited to something that would suit visitor accommodation. So under the legislation, both of those, because they're low density residential, we have no chance of getting resource consent. I think that covers it.
Yes, thank you very much for coming along. Just to be to make sure I've got your final point actually correct. So you've made or are in the process of making resource consents to exceed the 90 days,
yes.
And whether that's the 360 or something bigger than that, that's up to you and others to propose. So you seem to be saying that you accept that once over a certain limit, in this case 90 days, a resource consent is still appropriate.
Yeah.
And in some areas it may be that they get declined, and some areas they're more likely to be approved, and it gives the opportunity to put conditions on in the particular, as I think as you say, case by case basis.
Yeah.
So that is that your
yes.
Sort of summary of your
My concern is that based on what we've heard, once the changes are made,
yeah.
Basically anyone in a low density residential area will have no chance of getting resource consent for visitor accommodation. And I think that sort of carte blanche approach is probably not suitable. I think there needs to be a little bit more around that. But my bigger concern as well is the fact that reducing it from 90 days down to 42, I don't believe that's going to have any effect on those hosts out there right now who have absolutely no sort of intention of seeking resource consent. They're still going to be doing it illegally, and that brings down to the sort of policing and compliance and problems.
It just widens the pool of unpoliced
exactly.
properties.
Yeah.
Yes. And then the first answer that you gave me, in my mind, goes to how hard it is to get, or how stringent it is to get an application approved. In other words, because the activity status has changed,
yeah.
proposed to be changed, from a more case-by-case situation to, well, you'd be lucky to get approval sort of situation. And do you feel that's,
I think,
that's
yeah.
too harsh?
I think that's a little bit too harsh.
Situations where it may not be appropriate to approve, but other areas like you've said your Goldfield Heights area may well be approved but subject to conditions.
Yeah, that's my thoughts on it. I mean, right now there are a number of neighbouring properties to our Goldfield Heights property who already have resource consent in place. And I mean, I think it is, it's an apartment style living area, so it is suited to that sort of usage, whereas a residential property. In suburbia, it's a slightly different situation, I feel.
And that may well change over time as neighbourhoods mature or change. Right, thank you very much. Some of my fellow commissioners may also have
yes.
questions
yeah.
of you.
I won't jump
on number
one.
Yeah.
Am I to take from your evidence you do think there should be at least a registration type of system in place?
Yes, I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, there's obviously there are problems with that in the sense that how do you know people are leasing their properties? That's a difficult one.
It is tricky.
Without an army of enforcement people.
Yeah, I don't have a solution to that. Obviously, manpower is a problem, and I think the council are already probably understaffed and overworked, so the solutions there are probably a little bit tricky. And I mean, you're always going to have those out there who are non-compliant. Right now, I'm not sure that I've heard too much about the repercussions for those who are non-compliant and get caught. And maybe if there are actually some sort of repercussions on those people, and that sort of becomes a bit more common knowledge, it's going to put people off doing it illegally and sort of push people to do it the legal way, go through the right channels.
As someone who's obviously got into this sort of activity, do you think the market in Queenstown is approaching a saturation point with that form of accommodation? Yeah, just I appreciate that I'm not expecting a specific answer, but
yeah.
your impressions as someone who's involved in it.
I think we've seen over the time we've been involved, a lot of people have definitely jumped on it. The fact that our properties are remaining at occupancy levels above 90% suggests no. And I think the problem is obviously the hotel industry, as I mentioned, at times during the year is beyond capacity. So there's got to be something to soak up that overflow. I am aware that, yes, we've got some new hotel developments underway, but the increase in tourist numbers into Queenstown seems to be outstripping the supply of new hotel beds as well. So I sort of see it's the trajectory that we're seeing with the tourist numbers, I'm not sure if these new hotel developments are going to be able to keep pace with that. And in another 5 years' time, I see we're probably going to be in exactly the same scenario.
And do you think the new hotels are actually, even assuming they are coming in on stream in reasonable numbers, are actually providing the kind of product that you think people are...
Well, I think there's really two markets. There is the market that only want to stay in a hotel, and there's always going to be that market. But the research that Airbnb have conducted does show that there is a turning tide, and there are those groups of people now, as I've mentioned, who really want to see a city and stay in that city as a local does. And for them, the hotel industry is probably not very appealing.
You may have been present when I was asked a question of Ms. Parker. The concerns on you raised the same suggestion about having like two categories of areas within the low density residential zone, which effectively creates almost a higher and lower class residential area. Do you think they can actually be justified? Because if people live in the one zone, then they should be entitled to the same standards of amenities in the other people in the other zone, of the same zone elsewhere.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, ultimately, I'm not a town planner, so my understanding of the intricacies around that are pretty limited. For me, all I can say is if I look at Lake Hayes Estate where I live and Goldfield Heights where we've got a property, both ultimately are classed as low density residential, and I feel like they're chalk and cheese. So whether there needs to be some distinction between low density residential, I don't know. And I can see that being possibly problematic to draw a line in the sand as to what is what. That's probably beyond my pay grade.
No, that's fair enough. No, thank you very much.
I can totally sympathise with you being a bunny people, because I find myself there all the time. And I absolutely support your comments about your wife staying at home for the first 2 or 3 years of your kids' development. It's totally admirable. Just when you applied for resource consent, and thank you for being so frank in your submission, was there any limit imposed on the number of days that you could?
No, so the way we went through it was, we actually sort of fell into it a little bit. We maybe weren't fully informed, so when we purchased the first property, our intention was for short-term visitor accommodation, and we quickly found out that it required resource consent, something the real estate agent had omitted to tell us. So I went into
the real estate agent.
I don't know if it was purposeful, I suspect it might have been, but anyway, so I went and had a chat to the town planner at the council, who was super helpful, basically gave me some samples that had been approved, and as with the lady who was speaking earlier, basically I used those as a template, and I went through the resource consent process myself. So within that resource consent process, if I remember correctly, you can basically define your own operating limit. So for our properties, we've got no nightly limit. The only one is the noise between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. That seems to be an across-the-board limitation. And I mean, personally, I found the resource consent process was pretty seamless, and who I was dealing with was super helpful about it as well.
Must have struck council on a good day.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's all good. And you might want to keep that 90% occupancy figure quiet, I think.
Sure.
Wicked. Oh, no further questions, sir.
No, I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Ms. Bryant.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for letting me speak today. Mine is a little bit different from some of the other submissions. I'd like to speak to being an overseas person, Australian. Don't hold it against me, please. But my personal experience of Queenstown and why I'm an Airbnb host. I first visited Queenstown in 1975 and vowed to return here and live here one day. It took some time to do that, 20 years in fact. My husband and I bought our first property here, which was one of the old Habiki apartments in Hallenstein Street. During the past 28 years, I've lived in Hanoi, Vietnam for 6 years, in Manila, Philippines for 7 years, in Beijing, China for 8 years. My husband managed a multi-million dollar company. I was a journalist. Our working life in Asia kept us pretty busy, but our home, when we had holidays, was in Queenstown. Every year for those 20 years that we lived in Asia, my children returned not to Australia, they came to Queenstown. They went to international schools in Asia, and as you probably know, international schools have a 9-week holiday in the middle of the year. So we would come down here, I'd stick my kids up at the mountain at Coronet Peak in ski school every year, they're expert skiers now. And, Queenstown was home. In fact, my daughter, who we adopted in the Philippines, came to Queenstown before she came to Australia, and she's an Australian citizen. So they both have an affinity, and they both scream and shout whenever we talk about not having a place in Queenstown. So now our grandchildren are coming here. They, in fact, just left yesterday after their first visit to Queenstown. So when we're not holidaying in our Queenstown house, we enable visitors to come and stay, and we operate it as an Airbnb. We've done this for a couple of years. Our house is in a residential low-density zone in Henson Road in Queenstown, right next door to Mrs. Hensman, God rest her soul. So we have a big garden, we have a fully equipped kitchen where we can cater to dinner party level, and we have private garage parking for 2 cars. I believe we provide accommodation of the nature not currently offered by other commercial establishments, such as hotels and bed and breakfast. And after living in Asia for so long and having a very close association with many different cultures, I feel that we know what our Asian guests require in accommodation. And we like to show off. People are probably sick to death of us talking about Queenstown because we blab on about it all the time, and we have for the whole time we've lived in Asia. We provide a bottle of wine, we provide local provisions, we recommend local restaurants like the Boat Shed and Kinloch, which we went down to day before yesterday. We've just had our extended family group here of 17 people. They had the option of staying in a hotel. We could house my son and his wife and my husband and our grandchildren in our house, but instead they chose an Airbnb up the road. We couldn't obviously fit everybody in our house. One of the reasons for that is that although particularly my son may not look it, he's blonde-haired, blue-eyed, very tall, he's a Muslim. And our extended family are of the Islamic faith, and it's very important for them to have halal foods that they can eat. There is a wide range of halal food in Queenstown. The beef and the lamb, which is in the supermarkets when it is wrapped and when it is supplied to those supermarkets, it is halal. Once it hits the supermarket and they take it out at Pack and Save and they put it into their own wrapping, they can no longer have the halal certification on it. So if I'm out looking for for my family to cook, I can't really know what is halal and what is not halal. Therefore, it's very important for my family particularly, and for the many other Muslims that come here, to be able to have a place where they can go and buy food and cook it themselves. I've done extensive research while I've been here, finding restaurants, organising menus, that offer halal meals for my family, to the point where the boat shed actually opened up in the evening for us and provided a special menu. Now, I do that for any guests that have dietary requirements or religious requirements or whatever. Through the event, I have very close contact with my guests, and I'm very, very particular about who I allow to stay in our house. If people do not have at least 4 reviews, I don't allow them to stay. Now, Airbnb has very strict policies about discrimination. I don't discriminate against anybody unless there is a review saying, I would not host these people. And then I would not host those people, because I'm very careful about respecting our neighbours and making sure that they're not bothered by what's happening in my house. You know, we recommend, as I said, restaurants, outings, all sorts of things that our international guests, and that our guests are nearly all international, you know, the things that they want to see and do in Queenstown, they spend a lot of money here. And I think it's important that they have an experience where somebody who knows the town can explain to them the best places to go. The fact that there's a prayer meeting in the church hall next to St. Peter's for the Muslim community. The fact that they can go and be photographed where Yao Chan, the Chinese actress that had her honeymoon here, was photographed. I think it's very important to be able to provide that sort of information. I think that, you know, Airbnb provides something that other accommodation doesn't provide, a level of care, a level of interest. And also, if something goes wrong, you know, they have immediate help. You know, I have a house manager. I employ people in the town that can be there at the drop of a hat if they need, you know, any sort of support. I immediately deal with any issues. My house manager is, and I are in contact no matter where I am in the world, through WhatsApp, through Skype, through phone, through email. Luckily, I've never had any problems in the 2 years that I've Airbnb'd my house. I provide employment for local Queenstown residents. And the sort of employment I provide, it enables flexibility with local workers. You know, I have a gardener, a cleaner, a house manager, a regular landscaper, a gas supplier, a linen provider. My money goes into a very vast, I mean, my insurance bill for my house is $4,000, because I have every aspect covered. And I do that through a broker in Queenstown. So I pay that broker to seek out the best possible insurance that covers not only me, but my guests. Our house is registered with QRDC as a holiday home, and we pay high rates because of that. We declare our income on our Australian tax return as part of our worldwide income. We declare it on our New Zealand tax return. If my house wasn't an Airbnb property, I would definitely, absolutely not rent it out as a long-term option. When we owned our apartment in Hallenstein Street, of course, a lot of those Habiki apartments were rented out long-term at that stage, since a long time ago. And I had more trouble with long-term rentals than I have ever, ever had with short-term rentals. I've had people blocking me in for 2 days, blocking my car in the garage for 2 days. I've had the residents behind me throwing rocks on my roof when I've asked them to move their cars. I don't want my neighbours to encounter those sorts of problems through long-term rental, and then maybe in a position not to be able to police that, because I do not believe that real estate agents in Queenstown who manage long-term rentals pay as much care and attention to what's happening in those houses as they should. And as an Airbnb operator, I can manage any problems immediately. So I feel I do a better job of it, and I feel that my neighbours appreciate that more than if I let my house out. So I guess what I'm saying is that the council, I think, in this new district plan needs to strike a balance. Currently, I don't exceed probably 42 days. I like to have enough income to cover my trips to Queenstown. The money that I earn through Airbnb goes to keeping the upkeep of my house. It goes to paying for my holiday, so it goes back into the businesses in Queenstown because I'm using that in restaurants, I'm using that for activities. I just wouldn't like to see any more restrictions placed on it. You know, I live in the low residential area. I don't want, in the low density area, I don't want to have all sorts of restrictions that, for instance, would reduce me to, you know, what, 42 days in a year, is that correct?
Possibly.
Yeah, you know, that would be so restrictive that it wouldn't be worthwhile for me to do that, and therefore my house would be left empty because I definitely wouldn't rent it out to a long-term tenant. And yes, our house has been left empty for a year. When we've had tragedies in Australia, we haven't been able to come down. But I would rather do that than have a long-term rental in there. And I would rather Airbnb, as I do now, than have my house put to any other use. So that's about it, really. I think that the council, with registration, is doing the right thing. I think perhaps what I would like to see is when they register a house, perhaps there's an extra fee where an officer from the council could come around and perhaps just check for compliance. Check to see if you've got that fire extinguisher, if you've got those smoke alarms, if you've got that kit, that you know, the first aid kit, that you've got a list of numbers for emergency on the fridge or whatever. Whatever the council thinks is appropriate. I know what I think is appropriate and I've already got those things. But perhaps in registration, if they could do that, then that would help solve some of the issues that have been voiced here today. So that's about it, really. Yeah.
Thank you very much. So I'm showing my ignorance here. Yeah, Hinsman Street.
If you remember the old bottle house, we're just above it. Okay, so
above Frankton Road.
Yeah, it's above Frankton Road.
Not too far.
It's not as far as the marina. So it's between sort of town and the marina. We live down the hill. There's a laneway that goes down the hill, and we do have parking problems with that, but not from our guests. We have parking problems from rented accommodation up the hill and in previous years from the house in front. And I actually spent $2,000 to go and see a lawyer to have a letter printed up that explains what a right-of-way is and that people cannot park in our right-of-way. In my Airbnb instructions, which are lengthy, online and in the file that I leave on my table for my guests, I stress in the firmest possible terms that they may not park in the right-of-way. It looks like two parking areas, two parking spots. It's not. We have a no parking sign there. And in my personal communication with every guest, I reiterate that. And, you know, that's why I have a good relationship with my neighbour. The worst problems I've had were when the house in front was rented and the guys from that would party on and come down and park there and block my car from getting out. So, you know, I think there's got to be restrictions, but I think they have to be sensible.
So have you had to go through a resource consent process?
No, I haven't, but
under the 90 days.
Yes, but I have registered with the council, so we do pay a higher rate. Mm.
But you don't exceed the 90 days,
so
you haven't needed to get a resource consent.
No, and we probably never would, but I just don't believe that we should be restricted to the point that the plan suggests.
Do you have a view on whether at some point, whether it's 90 or 180 or whatever, that there should be a consenting process to look at the impacts on the surrounding neighbourhood?
Yes, I do.
Say for 365 days.
Oh, absolutely I do. There must be a balance. Should I rent my house out through Airbnb for 365 days? That would be totally unacceptable in my situation. And I wouldn't do it out of...
Because of your particular neighbourhood.
Because of my particular neighbourhood. It wouldn't work there.
Yes, but a lesser amount?
Yes, it may work, you know. But I'm a diligent host. And I understand from, obviously, you know, what I hear, that there are less diligent hosts. And I think the three strikes rule that I've heard much talk about is definitely something that should be implemented and would work here, you know.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's great help.
Okay. Yeah.
Not for me. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
In the city of Warwick.